Moving on now to something that's little known. It's Takatāpui LGBTIQ plus and the community's experiences with homelessness in New Zealand. Our next guest, Brodie Fraser, is hoping to change the fact that we don't know very much about it. She's just completed her PhD on the subject at the University of Otago's Department of Public Health in Wellington. And Brodie joins me now. Kia ora, Brodie.
Kia ora. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations. How are you feeling about having completed your PhD?
Oh, good. I don't think it's quite sunk in yet, but it's nice to be done.
I bet. So how long did that take you?
Just over 3 years full-time.
Let's start off with the terminology in case any of our listeners aren't familiar with it. Mm-hmm. What is Takatāpui and LGBTIQ+?
Yeah, so Takatāpui is a Māori word and it's kind of used in two different ways. So the first way is for people of diverse sexual orientation, so Māori who might be gay, lesbian, bisexual, but it's also coming to be used as an umbrella terminology for the community, for Māori specifically. And then LGBTIQ is people who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, and all other sorts of diverse sexual orientation and gender identities.
Why did you decide to look at this population's experience of homelessness?
Yeah, so I'm based in Heikanga Oranga, which is the Housing and Health Research Group, and my PhD is kind of in this housing first, broader research area. And for me, it was my personal ties to the community as a part of that community, but the wider group was sort of interested in picking up on the work that Sarah Fraser had done, looking at LGBTIQ experiences in halls of residence and kind of thinking, well, we don't know anything about that in New Zealand. Is this a problem? What's going on? What can we find out?
Well, we touched on this in your introduction, but how much research was already out there when you started working on this?
In New Zealand, there was absolutely nothing. There is now one other PhD student up at Auckland, Tycho Vandenberg. And there's international research. Most of it comes from North America, some from Europe and Australia, but in New Zealand, we didn't have anything.
So what did that international research tell you about homelessness?
Yeah, so it says that of homeless populations, roughly 20 to 40% of them identify as LGBTIQ, whereas in the general population, it's usually only about 5 to 10% of LGBTIQ people. So there's a really, really big overrepresentation in those statistics. And then we see that LGBTIQ people also face higher levels of issues such as poor mental health, substance abuse, sexual assault, all of those kind of horrible things are just compounded for this group.
Those statistics are really high.
Yeah, they are.
And how do you go about finding out that information? You just have to canvass every person, I guess.
Yeah, so in New Zealand, we don't have any of those sorts of statistics at the moment, but we're hoping with the next census, when they ask sexual orientation and gender identity questions, we'll be able to use that combined with the homelessness data that census gets. So they go out and they have teams and they work with NGOs to sort of find as many people as they can and see whether or not they're homeless on census night.
Yes, I've seen that as it occurs, and that's a great survey, quite difficult to carry out.
Definitely, yeah.
Because some people might not want to speak, you know, about the fact that they're homeless or about themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's, stats the consultation documents that they're putting out have been really good, and it seems like they're really working on making sure that they're asking the questions in a way that's really respectful to people, which seems quite promising.
So just as a rough estimate then, and I guess you've looked at it to try and guess, how many of the New Zealand homeless population identifies as queer?
Yeah, so it's really difficult. I looked just to try and see what percentage of the general population identifies as queer, and the data is not great, but there is the Counting Ourselves survey, which Dr. Jamie Veal has done, which estimates that in the trans population, it's about 1 in 5 people who've experienced homelessness. That's kind of the best that we've got at the moment. We don't really know for the wider LGBTIQ community.
Can you tell us about some of the interviews you did for your PhD, for your research project?
Yeah, so I interviewed 8 different people who'd been homeless throughout really different periods of their lives. So some of them had run away from home when they were teenagers. Some of them had kind of, it had been a culmination of their marriage breaking down, losing their job all while they transitioned, and so they lost their houses that way. Other people, it was addiction. Some, it was suspected homophobia on the part of landlords. It was a whole range of things.
Was it difficult doing those interviews?
It was, yeah, but it was also really touching to have strangers just share some of the hardest things they'd ever been through with me. It was a real privilege, and I did really enjoy connecting with people, but it was quite difficult, and it did make me reflect on my own housing experience as well, which up until this point I hadn't realised, you know, that some of my housing experiences could technically be classified as homelessness. So that was kind of another way for me to engage with the data and to really kind of understand what my participants were going through.
And being homeless brings with it a certain amount, I imagine, of shame.
Definitely.
You know, there's all sorts of emotional problems finding yourself on the streets. So that would have been hard to address.
Yeah, totally. Shame was one of the really, really big things that came up in my research, but because homelessness and LGBTIQ identities are still both really stigmatised. And then when you add in things like sex work and addiction and racism on top of them, it's just kind of this compounding thing. So quite a few of my participants had never spoken about their experiences of homelessness before, and this was their first time doing that, just because they had so much shame and felt like that their lives had kind of been a failure and they hadn't lived up to their potential, you know, which is not how I saw it at all. You know, I just saw immense strength from these people, and, you know, they just survived in the best ways that they could. And it was, I think for me, the shame should be on us allowing that to happen and allowing people to kind of get into those places in their life where they're homeless.
That's a very good point. And when you went to conduct an interview, how did you approach that? Did you just wander up and sit down and say, hi, kia ora, how are you?
Not quite. So my background is LGBTIQ activism, and I didn't know so much about the housing space, so we decided to use that as a strength for my research and try and find people who maybe hadn't engaged with housing service providers. So I made sure that I didn't go through homeless organisations so I could find that sort of different perspective. So I recruited through posters. I think social media was the most effective for me, the beauty of the internet. Actually it was mostly people contacting me and then some people kind of referring their friends and saying, hey, thought of you, and put me in contact with them that way.
So it was in retrospect?
Yeah.
So they were in houses at that point or in shelter?
Most of them were. A few of them were in emergency accommodation, and then some of them got back in touch with me later to say, hey, I've become homeless again, or I've had to find a new flat again. So it wasn't necessarily that they were in stable housing, but it was a little bit more stable than it had been in the past.
Pretty rough life for many.
Yeah.
I mean, homelessness, it's a word, isn't it? But the reality of it, it's tough.
It really is, yeah.
You know, being out on the street, and especially in winter and even in summer, you know. So all of those things, I think you're absolutely right when you say that we need a solution to this. So in the recommendations in your PhD, did you have a list of them?
Yes, kind of a whole chapter of them.
Okay, what are they?
So there's a few. So the main thing, I think, for me is that service providers in New Zealand, there needs to be some kind of framework that they can implement to ensure that they're providing LGBTIQ sensitive services. So at the moment, you know, a lot of them might say, oh, we treat everybody the same, which in theory sounds great, but in practice doesn't really work for the LGBTIQ community. So For instance, it's often common if shelters are segregated by gender to do it based on a person's identity documents, which for transgender people can often be out of date because it's a very difficult process in New Zealand at the moment to get those updated. So people can just, a transgender woman, for example, might get put into a men's shelter, which can be a very unsafe place for her. So that's one of the main ones. But also just, I think, funding is obviously a really big issue. I was overseas last year at a conference talking to some people in Ireland, you know, with a similar size population to us in LGBT orgs, and they were saying that, you know, it only took them 3 years to get funding for staff, whereas in New Zealand that type of thing would take 16 years. And I think supporting the LGBTIQ community to support ourselves is a really big part of addressing that, especially if people don't have families that they can go back to.
Yes, and what about you personally? What's next on your agenda now you've finished the PhD?
Hopefully some rest and rediscovering my hobbies and interests outside of academia for the summer.
Okay, what's one hobby?
I started learning how to weave during lockdown, so I'm currently weaving a scarf.
Weaving, right.
One day I might finish.
Very good. Oh, well, have a great summer, and thanks
for
joining us,
Brodie. No worries. Thanks for having me.
That's Brodie Fraser, who's just completed her PhD at the University of Otago's Department of Public Health in Wellington.